I'ma say what I feel, and I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Red Room. Well, you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminished and the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed in the rent room. We let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes, that's Mr. Bolakaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the crap of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want.
Welcome to the Rant Room.
What's up, y'all? It's your boy, Hilliard Guest. You guys are listening to the Screenwriters Rant Room. Where we keep it real, we keep it opinionated, we keep it what, y'all?
Wakanda!
That's the real.
Y'all know how we do it on the Rant Room. On this show, we discuss entertainment, TV, film, music, culture. But our focus is always screenwriting, stories, craft, and shit like that. So y'all hear the voices without misinterruption.
Lisa
Bolakaja.
Lazy.
Where you at?
Drive.
She ain't got no job. She ain't doing nothing.
Lisa Bolakaja should always be here.
I know. She's tripping.
Exactly. So y'all hear his voice over there. Chris Derrick from the writing directing team, the Derrick Brothers. What's up, Chris?
A lot, man. But I'm done with two scripts.
Good.
A pilot and a feature. I'm almost done with the scripts for this 5-arc of a comic book series that I need to send in to someone.
All right. Jeff said he wanted to see what you know.
Fist bump.
Yeah. And I'm prepping a pitch.
Really?
A new pitch. We have a bunch we're going to go out with, and hopefully we're going to go with one with Paul. But something new that I can't talk about.
Okay. Yeah. You shouldn't.
Right.
Because it's not secret what we're doing.
And then we got my man, Big Brother in the house, Jeff Thorne, everybody.
Up?
Writer, producer, showrunner now. Shit.
God.
You better do it, dog.
Yeah.
Hey, where's my job?
Hello.
Exactly.
No, I got all the jobs. I'm trying to get all the jobs. I'm going to be dancing in the background of my own show.
Exactly.
I'm my own backup dancer, damn it.
Right. Exactly. So we hope, I know you're busy, but we hope to have you on the show more often.
The kind of busy I've been for the last year has sort of wound down.
Okay.
With little, as we discussed the last time I was here, there's little I can actually say about the Black Panther show.
Understood.
But the writing portion, the official like scripts coming in and getting edited portion, that basically ended this week.
How many episodes you guys do?
I'm not allowed to tell.
Oh, you can't even say that.
Damn.
More than 10.
Okay, good. Good. Yeah,
many more than 10.
All right, good.
Honestly, I'm still not sure exactly what. There's certain fringe areas that I'm not sure what I can get at, but we can still get at some stuff.
Now, is it on Netflix or is it going to be on Freeform?
Wouldn't it be great if I knew the answer to that question? I can't tell you.
No one knows the answer. And
no, people know. I'm just not on that deck. I'm like down here in the if it was Titanic, I'd be down with
in the steerage. That's where you'd be in the steerage
with the black folks.
We make the ship go, but we don't get to go to the party
with the cattle and the ship.
But yeah, I mean, here's what I can say: it is not the movie.
Yeah.
In that we did not have access to the movie, so there may be some overlap in places because it's the same source material. Yeah. But we were largely left to make our own show, and so we made our own show. It is not the comic book. It is not the movie. It is its own thing. In the same way that the Warner Brothers DC related cartoons are not the comic books, and yet they are. Same with us.
Can I ask you this? Yeah. Are you guys in Wakanda? Or are you in
America?
Yeah,
there'll be some Wakanda-based situations. Can't do the Black Panther without Wakanda.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, we really. I was trying to work this out in the car on the way over. What I can say,
right.
Marvel really wants this to be something special, so they hired me.
Right.
I'm a live action writer.
Mm-hmm.
I asked them, "Are you sure?" They were like, "We're dead sure." That's exactly why. We're bringing you in.
Right. But you've also made many comic books.
Yeah, I'm all over the place because I got to eat.
Right.
But primarily, I'm a live-action TV writer of a particular stripe.
Mm-hmm.
And generally, that person is not offered this job. It's usually someone who's come up deeply through the ranks and really knows the process. So that sensibility, I'd say this. This is what I can say. My writing process does not change if I'm writing a cartoon or if I'm writing a show with human actors that right. you see their faces and all that. Right. I approach it as if it was a live action show with no budget restrictions.
So this is the thing that's exciting for me. It's one of the things I want to talk about today is that, you know, like your show is coming out, you know, in probably the wake
of, definitely the wake
of the movie.
Yeah. It's all about the movie.
And I kind of feel like, you know, it was, you know, there's been a lot of talk in some, you know, Forbes and The Economist and stuff like this, that the movie, that people are not going to the movies like much anymore. It's like, I mean, there's this down, and I think it's because we're seeing a lot of stories that
I'm looking at the movies, and it looks like a lot of $100 million movies going on there.
So, well, the business makes a split, right? Like, they don't really, Americans, and we've talked about this. I suddenly went into this weird phase where I was watching these little, I don't even know how to describe them. Some of them are comedies, some of them are romances, not really adventure or whatever, but they're British made. Mm-hmm. For various reasons, the BBC, the British movie making system, is wildly different right. than the United States version, largely
it's government. I've been binging on The Crown, that shit is.
But it's government subsidized.
Right.
One thing is, right. so there's certain things they have to do in terms of casting, and there's certain kinds of stories every year that have right. to be told, at least dealing with different milieus and right. things like that. God bless. They don't have as big a budgets. They don't have the giant stars, so they right. get to grab their version of a Broadway actor, shove mm-hmm. him in a weekly TV show, then he goes and does a big movie, and then right. goes back to the Broadway, and it's right. all the same deal to them because the amounts of money are smaller. Right,
right, right.
Over
right.
here, we have these giant splits. Well, if you're not on this kind of show, mm-hmm. or this is not Broadway, fantastic. Mm-hmm. There's Broadway, and then there's Broadway, you know, right? And there's movies, and there's movies, right? And our business has got this weird gulf, right? You can finance a movie up to a certain relatively low millions of dollars, right. and then there's this giant Grand Canyon of, well, if it's $38 million, we're not going to put any money into that right. because our advertising budget is blah, 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 blah. Like, I don't care about that. I'm trying to make my movie, man. And then it kicks back in around 100 mil.
Right.
And then, yeah. yeah, can you jack it up to $100 million?
Right. They're like, what is mid-level? We never heard of that.
Well, right? I'm like, the first movie we tried to make, my partner and I, Todd, was just one of our comics. And they were like, well, we can do this for like 50 mil. Because we kept trying to save the studio money. We're like, well, we can get away with this. And we know right. people who can do this for this way. And
but they
like,
don't even want to do it.
No, the opposite was happening. I won't say which production right, company. Right. But they were like, actually, this still isn't expensive enough. It needs to cost more for us to make. What can you do? And I was like, well, you know that sequence, that battle sequence with the space, with the dirigible comes right. in? Let's have 4 dirigibles and have them fight 6 dirigibles or whatever. Right, right, right. And 1,000 more animated dudes that he has to beat up. Doesn't that cost more money? Like, we can jack up these scenes. Totally. Like, no, we need a couple more bumps, and we need to go to Madagascar for some reason. And I'm like, not in this movie, and we didn't need to make that movie. Because these were arbitrary money-related, marketing-related, financing-related things that had nothing to do with telling a good story. And in fact, as you've seen in many a movie, hurt the storytelling.
Right.
So we don't make that little movie anymore. We make tent poles. Right, unless a star like The Post, like 5 stars want to get together and make a little movie.
I don't even know how they made that movie still. I still
while he's making another movie.
While he's posting a huge effects driven film,
right.
he's going to sneak this in.
Yep.
I mean, it's an amazing movie.
It's great.
I mean, I think most people haven't
seen it. It's old school.
But it's so good. It's, you know, it's not Spielberg fantastic like a Jones or something like that, but it's still like super high quality Spielberg and his execution,
and it's got a top drawer cast. Like,
and the cast,
no bumps.
The cast. See, it's interesting. If you look at his career, he usually doesn't work with a lot of big stars,
right?
You know, because he's kind of like the story, the movie making.
He's the star.
Is and yeah,
it's a Spielberg movie,
my
man.
Movie, and I'm doing that.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see. You know, it wasn't until he started working with Tom Hanks.
I was about to say, but Tom Hanks.
Tom Hanks in the mid '90s, I think with Private Ryan, that he started working with stars more because he wanted to do more stuff that was like prestige kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then I just kind of feel like he's never worked with Meryl Streep before.
Right.
She like Spielberg it.
Didn't work with her, and Tom Hanks didn't work with her.
That's weird.
You know, that's really weird.
That's
really, really
weird.
Weird.
That's
weird. And those scenes with them together are burning.
Let me put it like this. We watched the screener because the WJ gets lovely little screeners. My wife and I were sitting there, and I'm like, when's Tom Hanks going to show up? because I didn't have my glasses on, so everything was a little bit blurry. And he's in a scene with her, me and Ben Bradley, the first one.
Yeah,
and I was like, this guy's great.
Yes, dude.
Is that him?
This guy is awesome. She's like, Jeff, that's Tom Hanks. And I'm like, no, let me get my glasses. Right? But he embodied it. Like, he's an interesting... Anyway, we go off on Tom Hanks for a whole show. But getting back to the original point,
yeah,
people go to the movies. Right. Tyler Perry will tell you people go to the movies. And they go to movies that don't cost very much. Tyler Perry will tell you again. Right? And he'll make careers off that
stuff. He made his money back on Boo, too.
Well, see...
Right?
Yeah.
So they will go, but... What Hollywood is both having a problem with, and I think in some ways intrinsically resistant to, is the reason people are going to movies has shifted slightly.
Right.
A lot of people want to see, like, all right, man, you know, we've been watching Gary Cooper and Cary Grant and, you know, Mel Gibson all the way up to now. Where's my Idris? I need my Idris.
That's, you know, that's the point.
I need my Daniel Day-Kim, man. Yeah, I need my Daniel Day-Kim. Hey, is this set in China? I need to see some Chinese people.
Right.
Like a bunch,
Right? Yeah, because because if you look at, you know, there's an article that I read just yesterday from The Economist, and I'm like, but if you look at a movie like Get Out, it made so much money. So many people came to see
it.
Some people came to see it to make that kind of money. That's people seeing it 4 and 5 times.
Yep.
It's because there's not enough people who would just...
Like it's Star Wars.
Repeat business.
Just go to a movie. It's not, but that, I think, is what it is. And you're right. And I know that CAA put together this study that came out last April that if you diversify your cast to a high degree, then just the box office money is so much higher. I think that's what we see. Now. And to me, and so I bring this all back, is that that's where I think that Black Panther... the movie is going to be so explosive.
Look, you've saw nothing against Patty Jenkins. In fact, I created the hashtag Let Patty Drive. They should just hand that franchise, all those franchises, over her.
Right.
She came to make movies, and that's what she made.
Yeah,
she didn't come to do any servicing of fans or any of that nonsense. She came to make a movie. She made a freaking movie.
Yeah,
and oh my God, a movie! You know, let her have it. Let her drive. Okay,
because I think they had less expectations about. I think they felt this is going to be like another Zack Snyder type of movie. He's involved. He's writing the story. He's producing. It's going to be that. So and those are just constantly like failing for us.
Whenever they say they, I'm always wondering who the they is. Like women can't front an action movie. They say.
Right.
And then I'll go, I know you follow my Twitter, and occasionally I put up, where the hell is my Black Widow movie?
Right.
But that's just the phrase at the bottom. The top is the photos of not only all the women who fronted action movies, but have fronted action movie franchises.
Right.
You don't franchise a movie if it's not making money.
Right.
Period.
Right.
And not only have there been lots, there have been lots going back to the 70s.
Yeah.
So anyone who's saying, well, the conventional wisdom is that you know, a woman featured in an action film can't... We don't make as much money.
Doesn't travel.
Like, really? Tell that to, what was it? We're on Resident Evil 8.
Right.
They're retiring it so they can reboot it.
Yeah.
Bite me.
Yeah.
Ever heard of a little movie called Alien?
Right.
Bite me.
Lara Croft.
Coffee. There's the Proud Mary's coming out.
And that's just movies. Not even talking about
TV.
TV is another monster for that. Right. So who's this conventional wisdom? That's why I say it's a sort of intrinsic resistance, the conventional wisdom. What it is, and I try to figure out what it is, we're given no benefit of the doubt. That's what it boils down to.
Okay.
People of color, women, female people of color, gay people, whatever. If it's known that that's who and what you are prior to your making the film, the subject matter of the film almost doesn't even matter.
Right.
If it's known that the makers of the film fall into one or more of these categories, zero benefit of the doubt is now given.
Right.
This is us testing you.
Yeah.
And if you fail, and fail is a very gray term.
Because they only give one.
Right.
Right.
But a failure, like for instance, Man of Steel did not meet projections. Is it a failure? It made millions and hundreds of millions of dollars, but it did not make its projected nut. Right? So is it a failure? Depends on who's directing.
Right.
Right.
Spike Lee's directing. Well, see, we told you this guy couldn't handle this kind of a budget. Like, we need somebody like Zack Snyder to come here and really do it.
But
the same exact numbers, Zack Snyder's like, well, you know, the audience wasn't there for us. Try it again, Zack. We got faith in you. We'll get it again. We'll get it. We got hundreds of millions. We'll get another 100 million.
Well, see, you know, I was listening to this woman named Tina Brown talk the other day. She's like she used to run Vanity Fair.
The Cosmo? Yeah, 90s.
In New Yorker. She was saying this thing that I think refers, that I think, she was saying about women, but I think it refers to women and people of color. She was like, she said that women need to be gold for a silver situation.
Mm-hmm. Damn.
You know.
Stealing that. That's real.
And I was like, that's some dope shit.
Stealing that.
Because nice. I was like.
Say it again. Women need to be gold
for a silver situation.
That's nice.
And, you know,
that's,
yeah. For, that's yeah, us too, for black right. people too. Everything. Right. And she was saying that. She said that because when she came in, because she ran New Yorker, she ran Vanity Fair, and she ran Newsweek.
Okay.
But when she came into Vanity Fair, it was like getting ready to collapse. And so they kind of gave it to her as like,
because we can't do worse.
Because if it fails, it whatever.
Whatever. You know? It's going to fail anyway.
Yeah. You know. And,
let her happen.
You know, and basically the Vanity Fair that we know now
is her.
And then she left that in like 94, and she went to New Yorker, did the same thing, mm-hmm. and did the same thing at Newsweek, and now she runs the Daily Beast. Shocking. And she's like, it's just, you know, and this attitude she comes in with about this. I mean, she was saying that when she went into Vanity Fair, she was used to working at this magazine in London where the budget per issue was like 100,000 pounds, right?
Okay.
And then she was like, well, what's my budget for Vanity Fair? And the people at Condé Nast said,
what you got in your pocket?
There really is no budget.
There is no budget.
No budget?
Because see,
because they got a lot of money?
Because they said, we're basically trying to see what you can do. So
I need to know my budget, man.
Yeah, but they were like, don't worry about that. Because
we'll just give you money?
We'll just give it to you because...
What street are these people living on? I want to meet some of these people.
Because she's basically saying... They think it's going to fail.
So what?
So we'll just give you what you think you're going to get, and then we'll just roll
and then we'll blame you.
That
right. And then we'll blame
if
you.
If it blames you, if
it's magazine to a woman,
you,
it tanked.
So
it's her fault.
Her fault, right. You know. But okay. And I kind of feel like that's what's happening.
It's always what's
you
happening.
You know, and I mean, but so this kicks me into my conversation. I want to tell you guys about this, the Time cover.
Yes,
with Ava
and the ladies
and the four ladies on the cover, and it's like the little thing on the side was they're going to save Hollywood. And I'm kind of like, wow, that's like, you know.
Wait, did you guys see the subliminal thing in the photo?
What's no. the subliminal?
So there's all the women
in black,
and then
surrounded by blackness.
In the corner in the bottom is another arm saying, "Now the next person's coming."
Oh,
there's another arm.
I didn't see that because I only saw the thing online.
Well, we talked about this before we started the show. I think it's a lot of weight to put on Ava.
It's too much weight.
Ava's amazing. I mean, no one can take away her amazingness.
Right.
But to single-handedly save one film, single-handedly save the future of Hollywood, which is it in danger? I don't really know if it's in danger. But if it were... When she doesn't do that,
right.
Then it's all her fault? No.
See, yeah, that's crazy. No. It's like, I mean, I feel excited that she has this movie coming out. I feel excited that they gave her the money, $100 million they gave. What's his name? Like 150?
For Gambit?
No. For Black Panther.
They gave,
Ryan Coogler. Right. So they're getting the money that these, you know, to make the thing, to let their vision, you know, like fly... You know,
yes.
So I just kind of feel like, you know, are they setting them up to have, like you said earlier, are the projections going to be high enough? Are they going to meet certain things that they want? You know, what's it going to do if it, like, let's just say they went, well, you know, this movie has to make $500 million right now.
Well, wait, no.
And let's just say it makes $490. Let's just say.
Oh, she's an abject failure.
I'm just saying. Well, look, I feel like that's the way.
There's a couple of things, though. Like, all right, let's go to the Olympics. A few years ago, my wife and I were outraged. Right. I forget the name of the young lady. Our house is full of outrage. Between the two of us, it's constant outrage. But one of the Olympics, it was swimming. I can't remember the young lady. She comes off, I think she either got silver or bronze.
The black girl?
No, actually, she was a little white girl. Yeah. I say girl because compared to me, she's a girl. You know, she's 20. She could be my child. Okay. So she comes off. She's just beat her own personal best. Yeah. She's come within something like tenths of a second of whoever got the gold, right, whose name I also don't remember, by the way. Right. And she comes off, and the American reporter is like, how does it feel to lose at the Olympics? And she looked at her as if, like, I can't even process that you're speaking English to me. And all she says, I got a silver. And I was like, damn right you got a silver. Right. This year, one person on this planet can swim faster than you.
Right, one.
And what was wrong with that reporter to ask the question that way? It should have been, how happy are you to win for America this silver medal? Same thing with the
goes
medalists.
Down in history. Everywhere right. you go, you're
yeah.
a silver medalist.
Right. What right. they're saying
you
is,
meddled for
we're
country.
Expecting you to do X. Here's what's going to happen with Black Panther, no matter how good or bad Black Panther is. It will not be worse than Wonder Woman. We've already seen enough of it to know that. even if the entire rest of the movie is terrible, the bits of the movie we saw, people are going to be talking about that. They're going to go home and make their friends come see it. Okay. We saw the phenomenon of Wonder Woman. It tapped into the zeitgeist. It is a solid, rock-solid movie. It is not the second coming of motion pictures. Yeah. Patty Jenkins showed up and said, look, idiots, this is how you make a movie. Mm-hmm. A movie, not some crazy phenomenon. You're trying to build a franchise. Oh, I just came to make a movie. I made a movie. It worked like a movie. Mm-hmm. How shocking, right? I just came to do the job you hired me to do. But it also tapped the zeitgeist. Women have been waiting for their superhero, right? And all Wonder Woman had to do was not suck. It did more than not suck. It's way better than not suck.
Right.
But all it had to do was not be bad. It could have just been average, and everyone would have reacted exactly the same way because, oh my God, finally! Right?
Right.
That plus black people plus decent human beings around the world is Black Panther.
Right.
Okay? Same rules. All it has to do is not suck. As you've seen on my Twitter, all it has to do is not suck. It ain't going to suck. Mm-hmm. It's just not. It's not possible it's going to suck. So the projections that they make for it, Warner's puts out these projections. I don't know that Disney and Marvel put those projections out. They're happy with we won.
Right.
We're good.
We hit the 100 mark.
Yeah, we're good. We're good. We're all good. Like Ant-Man and the Wasp, we're good.
Right.
We're good. Doctor Strange. Y'all, we're good. We're good over here. Exactly. Right? Because people say, well, it didn't make as much money as, are you comparing one Marvel movie to another Marvel movie? Because they're both Marvel movies.
And they made their loot.
And they made what they came. Let me put it like this. Is there a sequel to Ant-Man? Then shut up.
Right.
Is there a sequel to Strange coming?
Exactly.
Shut up. Is a sequel to all of it?
But not automatically. If they suck, they don't make their money back. They don't come back.
Right.
The Hulk has not shown up yet.
Have you seen the Hulk in a solo movie?
Nope. I tried twice. And they're like, well, we can't get it to work yet.
Okay. So there's that track. And then there's the other track. Those are the two tracks. One, we're trying to set you up. In case you fail, this is what we're going to blame it on. The other one is we are confident, right, that these elements put together are going to make a lot of money. We don't need to have a specific dollar figure on it because we're good with a Scrooge McDuck pool full of money.
Scrooge McDuck.
I'm not kidding.
Yeah,
right?
I can go swimming in that money.
Right? Can I swim in it? Can I surf on it? I don't need to know every exact bill, right? Scrooge is a little crazy knowing every exact bill. So I think that's the paradigm. But the benefit of the doubt aspect is harsh for us. Because, and we've talked about this both off the mic and on the mic in other shows. Mm-hmm. Even today, I can't believe I'm saying it like this because it's not even today. It never stops, so whatever. A non-white, non-straight, non-male, any combination of those things, who's making something high profile, has zero benefit of the doubt. The implication of that is, well, look at this amazing thing. This is unusual. It's a unicorn.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's a unicorn.
Well, see.
Let's see if it's real.
Well, because, because it goes back to the point that I had. Whoever wrote the Black Panther movie, they.
Who did write the Black Panther?
I don't know, but they pulled a line from the script that they put into the trailer. And so one thing with the trailer that really bothered me. And it was like this guy said, the guy who plays. Claw, what's his name?
Andy Serkis.
Yeah. He says, you know, I've seen gods, I've seen all this kind of like aliens, but I never seen any like black people with technology. That scared the shit out of me. Is basically what he's saying.
And these monkeys can make this amazing car?
You know,
how can they do this?
And to me, I'm kind of like that.
But Claw is a racist jerk. So.
I get that, but you don't need to put that in the trailer the way they did because it kind of like adds that level of. You know,
that's hard because I guarantee you the director had nothing to do with that.
Right? I know. The marketing department, which is like, you know, it's total marketing department. And those people are kind of like, you know, they're just bolstering the sense of, you know, can he make a good movie? Let's see. Let's hope and see.
And there's an implied like, you know, he's going to stumble eventually. And then we got him.
Yeah.
Right. I mean,
by the way, just our. Ryan Coogler and Joe Robert Cole wrote the screenplay.
Okay.
Great. So, and by the way, the way Marvel works, they don't play with their properties. Marvel is, like, you've seen directors quit. Like, can't come back. I quit in the middle. Marvel does not play around with their properties. Mm-hmm. Like, when a Marvel movie comes out, it's a freaking Marvel movie. Okay? This movie's quality is not going to dip. The lowest, whatever you think, audience member, whichever of the many Marvel movies that has come out that you think is the worst, it's going to be better than that.
Yeah.
By definition, Marvel's not playing, man. They're not playing. That's why they stay winning.
Right.
Okay. So, and I'm not like a Marvel versus DC person. I'm just saying, whatever Kevin Feige is smoking, whatever weird think tank he's got up there, some cyborg unit from outer space is helping him make decisions.
But see, look, to me, it's very much like he just has a brain trust like what John Lasseter had at Pixar. And for some reason, the people over at Warner's who run that DC unit, they haven't got together that unit team.
Well,
I don't know who that would be for them, or if they want to do it that way, or whatever their internal politics are.
I think it's the latter. I don't know. Again, like you, I'm completely outside that black box. But what we have with Marvel is an example of them. Until the Netflix show showed up, Marvel really never made a successful TV show.
Right.
Okay. So they didn't have a model to go after. They had this dude show up and go, look, see Iron Man 1, how great that was. Can I be in charge now, please? I've been trying to get in charge of all this for a while. Can you now finally listen to me? Right. Like, all right, Kevin, fine, make another one, whatever. And then it keeps blowing up, and he keeps riding that. It's what do they call a rocket jump in a video game?
Yeah.
That's how he gets to the position he is, because he keeps riding success to the next success.
Right.
DC, on the other hand, has like almost decades now of examples of doing it right, but they have a clean split between their TV and they're movie people.
Yeah.
Movie people don't think like TV people do. They just don't. So they don't look at the success of the Berlanti Group, which basically works like Marvel.
Right. Yeah.
Right? In fact, so much so that they've shifted the paradigm of the way they make episodic television. They're hiring actors as series regulars sort of on three different things because you're going to pop up throughout the season. And all these things are going to coincide in a way. And there's going to be crossover events and all this kind of crap. Right. Right? That's because there's a small trust of people sitting around making all the giant decisions, and then the middle decisions are the showrunners of each show.
Right.
Right? That's how Marvel Films seems to work, too.
Yeah.
Warner's is a film company. So the film, and it's got an intrinsic personality, a built-in, dug-in personality of let the directors run their show. And the best we're going to come to Kevin Feige is this Zack Snyder guy made a comic book movie, 300, did great for us. We're loving it. Fans love it. He knows comic books. We don't really care about this crap. That's just people buy it. I don't know why. They're geeks, idiots, you know. But apparently a lot more of them than we thought. Let's get their money. Zach loves this crap. Let him come do it.
See, because to me, I think it's interesting because it's like Warner's doesn't make prestige movies. I don't think – I can't think of the last time –
Meat and potatoes, right?
I can't think that the last time that they made a movie that was even like nominated for an Academy Award.
Okay.
You know, so then it's like they want to do these movies, the big action type of situations. And those get kind of micromanaged to a certain extent. So I'm just kind of like, why aren't they doing that like with the hero stuff? I don't know why, but whatever.
Well, look at it like this.
I'm curious to see.
If you look at Man of Steel.
Here's the thing, because I know that there was the guy who directed the Clarence Thomas TV movie. He was going to direct The Flash.
Really? The feature.
Yeah, the feature. Like, they saw that and said, you know, let's get him to do The Flash and bring him in. And I was kind of like, but does he love...
Does he want to do The Flash? Does he even think about The Flash?
You know, and before that he did Dope. Right. You know, so I'm kind of like, okay, I get why you want him, but he's not like the guy that you get to do The Flash. I mean,
the same thing with Cogler. He's coming off Creed. Why would you give him Black Panther? It's still a superhero movie. The only thing they have in common is they're black. Like, but he obviously had some kind of
hunger. They made money on Creed.
Right. He knows how to make a movie that makes money.
Yeah. So, that's what it is. Yeah. That's what it is.
I mean, I don't know. I feel like this is a whole crazy tangent. We can go off forever. If you compare Man of Steel, the plot of Man of Steel, to the plot of the first Avengers movie, it's essentially the same plot. Okay?
Right.
I'm not talking about the specifics of character and all that stuff. Aliens show up. They're basically hostile. We chase them around for a while. They kick our butts for a little while. We figure out how to beat them, but now we're a little bit weaker right than they are, because otherwise what's the fight about?
Right?
And then there's a giant climax where we got to hit these things head on in a major city. Right? But in the Avengers movie, and not just because they had all the feeder movies going into it, they literally took times, and I got to tell you, as much as people are giving Joss Whedon crap right now for the unpurchased, unmade script that was rejected many years ago, He took pains to make sure that the heroes behaved in heroic fashion.
Right.
Every sequence, one or more of them is taking a hit for a civilian, rescuing a civilian, pushing something, like all of that stuff, because they're heroes. In Man of Steel, none of that happened. He just fought, because there's a contingent of people in the audience who think that these are just fights.
Right.
It's essentially big, strong person versus other big, strong person. I'm like, yeah, if you're a geek, that's ridiculous. If you're a film goer, that's ridiculous. You want to care, right?
So they're moving the action through character.
I think it's like Transformers. I think that they think if we just do the set pieces,
people will do it.
And people come and love that.
If you look at the end, of Man of Steel, Batman vs. Superman, Wonder Woman, which was from which is from Zack Snyder,
that third act was the boss fight was.
It's the boss fight.
Yeah.
Because it's brawl against brawl. If you look at the first Avengers movie, they were fighting and loot, and it was kind of to a standstill.
Yeah.
Until they decided, let's use our brains and let's get that missile, because the American government had basically said, let's just sacrifice Manhattan.
Let's write off Manhattan.
Let's just write it off.
Manhattan's gone. Do we really like
it? It's an island anyway.
The rents are too high.
And we're going to send a nuke at it, and they figure out a way to use their brains. And I was telling someone, like, after I walked out of Justice League, I was like, the one thing that I really think I love about the second Christopher Reeve Superman, when he first fights the Kryptonians, is that he gets in that chamber.
It comes back.
And the power sucking thing is outside.
Right.
And he tricks them, thinking, I'm weak. And, you know, that was so smart. I was like, brains.
And the audience was like, brains. Both with you with and you, like,
damn.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, and it wasn't this brawl where Superman beat up the three.
He outsmarted them.
Yeah. That's what I think is you want to watch when you want to watch a movie of that, you know, that they're at these god levels of strength, or really anything. You want to see, can the hero outsmart the villain?
Oh, you know, that little thing called character arcing. I mean, like, there's a difference between generic slasher flick X, of which there's more than, that's most slasher flicks. Right. And then there's a movie where people get killed and you're like, oh my God, Becky got killed.
Right.
What's the difference? Well, I give a shit about Becky.
You cared about her.
I know who she is. I know what her life goals were. I know that life is cut off. It actually matters that she's dead. And when the others see her, they're going to freak the fuck out.
Yeah.
Because they're their friends. And it's not just like, okay, how can Jigsaw interestingly chop this person up?
Right.
And I think on the side, we really have to lean into this notion that the people who make the financial decisions for our business don't think like us. And I don't mean just they're not creative people and they don't really. They literally do not think like us. So what they see with Jigsaw is it costs X, it had these bells and whistles, audience likes that. So
turn up the next one.
Yeah, just like minimize all that walking around talking crap. Lots more puzzles that chop up children. That's what the audience loves, and I'm like,
that's what they're talking about. But they're only talking about that because
they cared about people who
went through that ordeal.
And that's an esoteric thing that cannot be brought across to a person who is unfairly referred to as a bean counter.
Right?
They're not thinking in those terms. They're literally thinking the set pieces, which is where this whole weird Grand Canyon of financing comes from. Mm-hmm. Right? We don't care about all that. That's what y'all do on a set. Like, we don't care about the sausage. Right? We talk about how to sell the sausage, how much we're going to market to sell the sausage. Like, they try to make it widgets. And that's a perennial friction. You were the one who told me this. They're the princes, directors of the princes, not the kings.
Not the kings, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But that's the perennial argument of this industry, is they truly do not understand what we do. They just want us to keep freaking doing it. The day someone comes up with an algorithm that can write like one of us, like a human being, we're out.
Yeah.
Right. If you could program a computer to think like to shoot like Scorsese, we're out.
Yeah.
They can't do it because we don't know enough about the human brain yet. But they keep trying every year.
That's interesting too, though, because I feel like this is the point you brought up about Scorsese. Because I said argument I have with people about Stranger Things.
Okay.
Is that Stranger Things doesn't resonate to me as a viewer. For a lot of reasons, but mainly it's because I feel like they're very good at aping Spielberg, but they're very good at aping the top level like shots and stuff of Spielberg. They don't From what I've seen, I've watched only 8 episodes. And
the first season?
Yeah, I grind through because I'm not so into it for some other reasons. But then I realized, again, I just bring it back because we were watching The Post. I watched that in Munich recently. It's like he has this kind of like, he knows what to do with the camera in those interstitial moments. Yeah. It's almost like, you know, when a comic book, the space between the panels
matters.
He knows that like almost nobody. Mm. And people don't know that when they want to emulate his work. And that's where I think when you create an algorithm that can maybe shoot like Scorsese.
It can't really.
It can't really. Because
well, that's why a computer can't write an evocative poem. It can, because there's an unquantifiable human experience thing that, oh, I get that.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't articulate.
It's an emotion.
It's something, right? Ephemeral. It's truly, literally ephemeral.
You can write something that rhymes, but you can't write something that rhymes with heart.
You could even probably create an AI that could match Dickens' style.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
But maybe not. Maybe that's even still beyond them. But if you could, it still couldn't average reader would be like, they wouldn't know why, but they'd be like, no. So... okay, so going back to sort of what we've been circling around about, what all big industries are interested in is more of the same. All of them. They want to be able to mass produce that Jetta, right?
Yeah.
No matter if people love it or not, as long as people are buying it and like it enough, right? Spend as little money, make as much money. The genius of Hollywood was making a assembly line out of making out of art. Someone figured a genius way to turn making art into an assembly line, and for the most part, it still works. It's exactly the same assembly line. The problem is the specialization of the parts of the company, right? The people who are making the car, most of us are drivers of cars, right? Like, we don't just make movies and TV. We watch it,
too. We consume it all the time.
I'm deep in my Avatar game, Avatar the Last Airbender, but I'm making the Black Panther for Marvel. I'm not going to stop loving that freaking show because I'm making another cartoon adventure, right? But on what I call the upper deck, they're literally like at the top of a castle looking down on a battlefield. So, like, what we're doing in the battle...
They're not worrying about it. Does he have a mace? Does he have a sword?
Like, whatever, dude.
Two-handed swings? What's he doing?
I need my troops to advance to that new point. Dot.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. I don't care how they get there. If somebody
advances...
By the end of today, all my troops need to be up to this line. Go. Right. Go do your thing.
That's right.
So, I mean, but getting back to the weight of the world being on Miss DuVernay... I think on some level it's all props, all praise, because she deserves it. She's been banging in a lot of different ways that a lot of people still don't really know about. Distribution companies, supporting of new artists, trying to get people's work out there that is not her own. And in fact, she's not even producing it. She's just trying to get light on various subjects. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's if she was a dude, they'd already have statues.
Right.
Like, straight up. Like, she's like a ninja and a samurai. Okay? But... everybody wants a figurehead. Everybody wants a front piece. And she's the one who's stepped into that light right now. I have only good feelings about what's coming with A Wrinkle in Time, more so than even the who's directing it, but just really, really finally, like, multi-ethnic sci-fi adventure. People who haven't read the book are going to find the books, I should say. There's a heavy Christian overtones within it, much like the Narnia books.
Right.
So you think they're not going to pull that out?
I don't think they can from A Wrinkle in Time, but I think it's definitely why most of those Narnia books aren't going to get made forward, because they become straight up proselytization. Right. But it's also why, like, this is another thing where the machine doesn't work. Everybody wanted to do his Dark Materials, right?
I was bringing it up.
What was the first one called? Not the Amber Spyglass.
The thing with Daniel Craig and
right. Yeah, okay, we all know what we're talking about.
Nicole Kidman.
Oh, the Golden Compass.
Golden Compass.
Okay, but the books are straight up anti-religion, anti-church. Like, and someone went, all these people are buying these books. It's like Harry Potter up in here. Right. We need to make these movies. And I'm like, exactly how are you going to get around the bad guy in these stories? Because the bad guys in this story is God. And I don't mean like a proxy for God. I mean the God you all are going to church about every Sunday. That's the bad guy. Did nobody read the actual books?
No.
What are you doing?
Because you know Hollywood.
Yeah, they're like money.
Nobody reads, and they see the sales number on that book. Oh, let's do it.
It's up near Harry Potter. Mm-hmm. That's going to be our Harry Potter. right? He's got a female lead. That's great. Mm-hmm. Little kid. She's going to be great. She's going to grow up in the book. Awesome, right? All that stuff. And I'm like, did you read it?
Because if you don't read it, then you kind of played yourself.
Also, if you try to take that component out, it's going to be very interesting what you do to try to take this very massive component out. Because the people who love it are going to be like, where's my component, man?
Right. Where's it going to work?
Man. Right. Right. Yeah, my component, man. Right. So, but that's the disconnect between the two groups. What folds in with us is there's going to always be someone prominent. They did it to Tyler Perry, by the way. He didn't make it on time. But when Tyler Perry showed up and started blowing out with those crazy Madea movies, mm-hmm. people are like, where did this come from? And I'm like, he did the Woody Allen model.
Right.
It's not new. It's just you're not used to seeing a black man doing it or a black person doing it, right? I presume at some point, let's see what happens with, what is it, Crazy Rich Asians?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope that blows the hell up.
Oh, man.
I want that to blow up so big, so crazy big, just because that will be a new minority group getting a taste of what has been always going on.
That, yeah. That, well, I mean, you know, like, I'm very curious to see that because I haven't read the book. I was going to read it, but you know, there's so much stuff on the nightstand that I just got to kind of figure out what I'm going to read.
I haven't bought a comic book in 2.5 months.
oh, my God.
Not one. I haven't read one.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What did I read the other day? I was reading Deadly Class. I was rereading it because of Miles. Mm-hmm. It's just, I'm very curious to see.
You have them all?
What, Deadly Class? Mm-hmm. I just got the trades.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great.
Yeah.
I'm really excited to see that I mean,
how they adapted.
I can't I can't speak on what I know.
Uh-oh. There you go.
So, it's going to be exciting. Mm-hmm. And it's cool because it's like the cast on that is like it's a Latino, it's an Asian girl, it's a black girl, a Latino girl, I mean a black dude and like one white guy.
Right.
And, you know, they're all assassins and shit from these different crime families and stuff like that. I mean, it's dope. But it's cool because you get to see these other people. I mean, like, you know, the Asians and the Latinos, we kind of know they have gangs. We've seen
the Mexican mob. But you haven't seen a lot of Amish gangs going around. Right.
You know, and I know. So it's going to be smart to see that thing. And that's why Crazy Rich Asians would be cool, too, because it's like, I remember my brother was telling me he was in South Carolina like a year or two ago. He was saying that like there's Indians from India down there buying up shit, and they're buying up the big houses because they want to live the way that white Americans have lived.
The movies have been
Right. You know, and this, he said this one guy bought two lots and like made it just a big ass house because he was like, I can afford it and I want that.
It's funny because we were in Louisiana. We were in Abbeville scouting, and it's Cajun country. You go into any little corner store, and it's all like Vietnamese, and they all sound like Southern.
That was the biggest cultural shock to me when back in the day,
right,
when I first moved to Atlanta. It was the first time I heard a Southern accent come out of an Asian American face. Right. And I did my first ever racial double take off that because I was used to British. That didn't happen again until there was a lady on Battlestar Galactica who was Australian. There's a huge, I mean, all over the West. Right. All of us are all over the West. I'm sure there are plenty of people who see my accent coming out of a black face and be like, what the hell? But it's expected more.
But the Southern hick accent coming out of an Asian is a little much.
Well, they're Americans. I mean, we are all over the place. The Asian subculture's got an interesting road to hoe because being the model minority ain't better than being the one to get hit all the time in every respect.
Right.
Like, we're the one to get punched every time. They've been invisible the whole time. And that's good because you're not getting the whip right away. But it's really bad when it comes to being part of the actual society.
Yeah.
Whether you like our position or not, it's in the society.
I started watching this show on Netflix, Reggie Yates. I think it's called Outside Man.
Okay.
This is a British black guy who goes over to like different countries and like, talks to folks, but he actually like spends a night in the place and becomes whatever it is and learns about it. Mm-hmm. So he went to South Africa to this particular area. Here we are 20 years later since 94. and there's an area where all the white people live who are dirt. I mean, like shantytown poor. Mm-hmm. And it's been a reversal. So they were driving on their way there, and he met with some big DJ who's very wealthy. They have a name for it. They call the wealthy black guys. Yeah, right. And so,
shocking.
It's a trip though. So they get to the place where all the white people are. And he's driving, he's talking to the camera, he's like, wow, I can't believe I'm actually going to do this thing, whatever. And he's like, oh shit, I'm getting nervous, just going in here now. Now I think about it, he's like, this is going to be a completely different, there's only white people. And you see goats going by and just the poorest dirt, poor white people.
Is this the Appalachia? What the hell happened?
So he gets out the car and he looks around and he goes, and he turns to the camera and he goes, shit, we don't even have this in England. Like in England, look. He's like, I'm sitting here like dumbfounded to see. I'm so used to black people living like this. I've never seen white people like this in my entire life. It was like this whole thing. So he went there and spent this whole, you know, a couple of days or whatever. It's so interesting to see the reversal. So the guy who was driving him was telling him. I'm jumping off. So
okay,
the guy who was driving him was telling him that if he went for a job now. And a white guy had the equal resume that he did, he would get the job. It's totally turned around.
It's flipped
over. It's flipped over.
Well, they got probably another 80 years,
right.
100 years maybe of payback before things balance
out. It just started, right?
Right. And by the way, their payback's fairly gentle. It's like, now we're driving. Right. We are driving now. Right. You can sit in the back seat.
Exactly.
But just in the back seat. We're not going to hit you or anything. But backseat for you.
Right.
I don't know if that's necessarily the right way to go, but considering what everyone thought was going to happen over there, like y'all got off light.
Look out, real way.
We could still be waiting in blood. Like we could still have blood beach party.
Right. If it was a reverse, we'd all be dead.
If it was a straight up reverse.
Right. It's like that. Remember that little that photo I sent you on Twitter?
Oh, yeah.
What'd you say?
It's this photo I found. Where it's like, it's some shot on a plantation, right? And it's got white people working the fields.
Yeah.
It's got black people who are cracking the whip,
really?
You know. And in the sky, it's got Martin Luther King's face. Like,
it's so crazy.
So like,
but you know what? Okay, so that's the other thing we were talking about off mic. So one of the things I'm really happy about with Ava was after Selma, my concern was the kind of props that she was getting for that. The next logical choice would have been another deep Oscar bait,
right.
You know, black related, look at our struggle type of.
Well, she did the documentary.
Right. Yeah, but like, it's a documentary.
Yeah, people do. Much,
like, film heads see that, maybe really deep, like, black studies type people see that, and like the general sort of liberally audience sees that if they want to. But most people don't go for documentaries, which is why they don't make money. And her next thing is a big budget sort of space epic with kids in the lead. I mean, that's great. It was a great choice, and it showed a kind of flexibility that overall has been lacking in our subculture. Where she, like, and I mean, like, she's one of the 2%, maybe, that really tried to flex this.
Well, yeah, because I believe she was offered Black Panther first and then turned it down.
Right.
Don't know why.
Maybe she wanted ladies up front.
She maybe made the ladies, or she might not have. She might have bristled at the control that Marvel puts on the thing, because she's got a vision.
She's gonna play her vision out.
And I feel that. And if you look at the 20 Marvel movies that are made,
they're Marvel movies.
The people who the visionary film directors are not doing that work.
They quit.
You know, look.
I like.
There's no Fincher. There's no Tony Scott type of person.
It's a template, right?
Yeah.
It is in a way, but in another way, what I always say is a conspiracy is unnecessary if we all already agree. So some of the directors are great directors, idiosyncratic, I mean, but their sensibilities happen to line up. So let's say James Gunn. It was like, I don't know what you guys are talking about. I'm having a ball over here, right? But it's because the things that are coming out of James Gunn match exactly or close to exactly with what they already envisioned the project to be.
Right.
Like, I mean, much smaller, much lower money, much everything smaller. In my case as well. They hired me for a very specific reason on this Black Panther show. They did not want more of the same stuff. So by definition, if I deviate from what the same was, that's good in this particular show. On another show, may exact same people, they're like, look, we hired you to make season 5 of, you know, Ant-Man and the Wasp. Don't come in here trying to make Ant-Man and Wasp and Yellow Jacket.
Yellow Jacket?
We didn't hire you for that.
We didn't hire you need that kind of duality.
But that's not what we hired you for, man.
Right.
Man.
Okay. All right, man.
All right, man. So, yeah, so there's a lot of, like, there's a lot of sameness in the kind of work that has come out of our subcultural groups. And part of that is, I think, self-created, what's of interest to the filmmakers. You can't knock what's of interest to them, what they're passionate about. But there's also several wedges that, like, I don't know what would have happened if Ava's movies were all about Native Americans dealing with other Native Americans in the present day. Would they have gotten as much props?
Well, no. I mean, yeah. I mean, I'm not saying she needs to do that. I just think that, you know, like, looking at Middle of Nowhere and looking at Selma, you know, like, she I'm not saying she's as stylistic as, say, Spike Lee's work is, but she does have a style to her thing.
You know, it's a DuVernay movie when you see
it. Yeah.
And you,
you know, I mean, and that's the thing. I mean, it's one of the things that I thought was interesting about...
Which is hard to do when you're directing. You have to really figure that out because it's been done so many times. How do you have your own style?
Well, I mean, yeah, true. You know, it's like this thing now where I had this conversation with my brother Alex. Now I'm like, if I see anybody do a fucking teal orange color palette again. That right there is knocking you down to a C. It don't matter what your movie is, you got a C. So you better work really hard. Because I see it in everything.
Yeah, stop doing that.
And I'm just kind of like, you know what? If you jump back, and I kind of figured out why people did that, though. It's because the way people light things now, they don't really play with shadow nearly as much. So they use the color light to paint the shadow. So
like, I'm a big fan of heavy blacks myself.
I love heavy black. I love heavy black.
That's the biggest component. And also, there's a uniformity. And some of that is because the bigger the budget, the bigger the movie,
I know,
the more corporate people control.
You know, I was having this discussion the other day with someone. I guess there's some dust up on the new Alex Garland movie.
Okay, what's that? Which one?
So it's not even out yet, but it's with Natalie Portman and like and Alex Garland. He wrote like 28 Days Later, and he wrote the latest Judge Dredd.
I like Dredd.
I like that too. And then they fired the director in post, and so he did all the editing.
Oh no!
Which gave him the. Like you said, the rocket jump to do Ex Machina.
Oh, okay.
So it's the guy who did Ex Machina. It's his next movie. But apparently there's like some, the producers and him are having some big clash now about this movie. I can't remember what it's called. My friend was telling me about this, and I was like, oh, but you know what it's like? Like, producers sometimes don't know what the movie's going to be, even when you tell them what it's going to be. And I just remember about 20 years ago, when I first came out here, I saw this... I saw one of those early cuts where they give you the cards.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
of
yeah,
Jesus. Of the Three Kings.
Right.
Okay. And the producer was so
the before. Ice Cube movie?
Yeah, Ice Cube, George Clooney.
Three Kings. Yeah. Stealing the gold.
Yeah, and there's this whole thing where like the producer before the movie began, he was like so trying to like you know like ratchet down our expectations, and he was like, "What? Cause the director wanted to shoot in this thing called cross process, like reversal." And so I just wanted you to know this is not going to look like a regular movie. It's going to look a little like rough around the edges and stuff like that. And I nearly shit my pants because I was like, I know what that looks like. that was a choice that could make this look really dope because you're in the desert. It's going to pull that white and blue out of it, make it look different. We saw the movie. Movie was great.
Right.
You know, it looked different than any kind of like desert kind of heist thing. Afterwards, I asked the producer, I said, so didn't David O. Russell tell you what this was going to look like beforehand? And he was like, yeah, he explained it to me.
But I didn't really get it.
But yeah.
So you gave him the money anyway? What? Okay. But here's the question I have to ask about this kind of stuff. Our industry, people don't realize how incredibly sloppy every aspect of our industry is, right? Really soft compared to, let's say, making a car.
Okay? Yeah. Yeah.
A computer, or I don't know, killing a whole bunch of cattle and turning them into steaks. Mm-hmm. All that stuff's precise compared to what we do. Okay. I mean, even meat packing is more precise.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, see, we're the only industry where sometimes you're on the set, you have it all worked out, and literally you'll go, your DP will go, well, I know how you have, why don't we just move the camera right there?
Exactly.
It to be sudden, something simple.
Right. Yeah. Or
you have it all planned out.
This is a perfect example. And this is how perfect it is, because it didn't even end up getting a shot we used. Okay, that's the end. That's the punchline. Mm-hmm. We were shooting my first episode of Leverage that I wrote. The showrunner creator, co-creator, is directing it for the first time. So everybody's tense. I'm freaked out. Freaking Richard Chamberlain is the guest star. Wow. I'm like a mess, right? Plus, the wife of Dean Devlin is our villain. Mm-hmm. So he's there all the time, too. And I don't know him at all. I'm like, oh, my God. This was crazy, right? For me, anyways, very tense situation. We're going through the whole thing. It's the last day, doing this really nice, quiet scene under a bridge. And we're starting to get to that point where we're going to lose light, right? We're not there yet. And then all of a sudden, the DP's like, the train is coming. Look at the sun. And John, the director, was like, yeah. And we were packing up to go. Everyone dropped what they were doing, unpacked everything, scrambled back to be in this right place under the bridge. Right. So that
just as the train goes
and the light was doing that, and they do the scene, and they did it perfectly. And it was, by the way, the best version of the scene from both sides. Right. Everything cool. We couldn't use it for various reasons later. But I watched it, just it felt great and it looked right, but because of the light quality and the tone that we had there, it felt right in the moment, but it didn't fit the rest of the
didn't match the rest of the episode.
So we couldn't use it. But I've never seen more people mobilize that fast that weren't in the military just to get the perfect shot.
Right. It's a machine.
Right. But that's the creative upside.
But you made a great point. The military. Like I've talked to some people who've done some military stuff and who work in the film industry. Mm-hmm. They now work as grips and stuff like that. And they say a lot of times when they want to move, they move like the military. Right. And it's all that kind of – and you want your team like that. And they'll go for a shot like that. Because everyone in the moment knows – this is why we go to the movies.
This exactly what you said.
It's a money shot.
But it's the thing that's like, here's why we all got in this.
Because we
got,
oh shit.
Why we all got in this.
Because the minute you said the train's coming, the light, and I'm like, oh yeah, it's going to come.
It's going to be exactly the right time.
It's going to spatter it.
It's going to be beautiful. Right.
And just all of a sudden, this and everyone kind of knows that, and they're like, oh, we got to get that.
Yeah.
Because they all want to say, we were there when they did that shot.
And if we don't get it, then we're all going to feel like jerks walking home tonight.
Yeah.
We got to at least try.
Yeah.
But it wasn't anything anyone said. It was just this sort of electricity went through every person, and
we all saw the same thing.
A bunch of dogs hearing something that you can't hear, right? That's the good side of the industry, right? That's the good part of the sloppiness where people are like, well, it's 5:30. We should all have been, we have overtime now, man.
Exactly. Yeah,
like,
we want some,
talk about some.
You did not call Grace, dude.
Right, didn't call. Are we golden time now? Like, we're only going to do this one shot.
It's golden hour, so it's going to be golden time.
Right, none of that, right? It was just get the shot. The downside of it, though, is where graft and weird sort of personal relationships and all that stuff comes in. And that's where this sort of resistance to diversity lives, too, right? It's like, yeah, because here's the thing that used to boggle my mind for decades now. I mean, I've been doing this since I was 14, 15 years old, in one version or another. There's money on the table.
Mm-hmm.
There's all these people who want to see something. Males, females, different colors, different ethnicities, whatever. They like to see it, and there's millions of them.
Right.
Literally millions of them.
Right.
And if only each one spent $1, that's millions. But movies cost $14 to go see.
Exactly.
Okay. Why are you not trying to get that audience? You don't have to go to dinner with these people.
Right.
If you don't want your daughter to marry one of them, okay, that makes you a jerk, but I don't care. Make the movie, right? Isn't this because we're always told it's about the money? It's not personal; it's just business. It's all about the money.
Yeah, because it's like cars. Like the people, you know what? They want everybody to buy a car.
Yes, everybody. They want everybody to buy a car. They don't care. But movie people, here's what happens: Hilliard make the right movie, and next year he's at that same dinner party, whether you like him or not.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Like Rebecca Chang makes that right movie. Blows the hell up, and I don't really like Asian people. Damn it.
Mm-hmm.
She's
going to
sit
with
club
him
now.
Yeah.
She might say something to me. I don't really like Asian people. You know, like, that is part of the that is part of the calculation.
Yeah.
And you got a room full of guys that have, like I said, if no conspiracy is necessary, if we all basically agree, they're not to discuss this. That's where common wisdom comes from, right? So every time a black person or a woman or a Latin person or whatever comes up and doesn't hit it out of the park,
right,
that's an indication to them, see, that's what happens when you let one of them do that. Right.
Every time.
See, is it, you know, since you bring up the conspiracy of everyone, you know, this is a really, I think, one of HBO's top three, like made for HBO movies. It's called Conspiracy.
Which one?
It's the one about the Nazis.
Deciding
the final solution, right?
Right.
And it's basically taken from transcripts of this meeting. So what they're saying is what they said to determine, you know what, let's send them all to gas chambers.
It was all at the mansion, right?
Yeah, it's all at a dinner table. It's like fucking Kenneth Branagh does this marvelous performance as Reinhard Heydrich. But it's like they never say we're going to kill them all. They never say we're going to hate
talking about,
and we hate them.
Freight
and
numbers.
Yeah, and we're never – there's no like vile, like harsh – you know, like, I hate him, I hate him, I hate him, let's kill them all. There's none of that. Discussion is...
Well, that's a given. We all know that.
So, so there's no discussion on that. It's just like, well, we found that if we move everyone to here, then we can, you know, process this many in a week. And I was like... And that's how they kind of kept it. I was like, but you know what they're planning. Yeah,
you know the units you're talking about are people.
Are people that you're going to murder, that you're going to move.
Is that this method been established?
I was like, fuck, man. But that's, I get what you're saying.
So I look more to, and you're a filmmaker. I'm a TV guy. there's a lot of like the financial aspect of making movies independently that I know nothing about, basically.
It's the worst.
I imagine it must be the worst. But when I look at the various tools that are now available, and I'm not seeing the same level of technological advancement allow for Tangerine to get made on cell phones,
right,
and be indistinguishable from a regular motion picture.
Right.
If they didn't tell us that, we would not know.
Right.
Right? So if that's true, Tangerine was not just a low-budget movie that was made and looked on par with a high-budget movie. It was about a subculture inside a subculture inside a subculture. And it was still awesome.
Right.
And the only reason they were able to make it was because it was so inexpensive for them to do it that way. But where's my George Lucas?
Mm-hmm.
Right? It ain't Ava. Ava's making blockbuster movies for giant companies,
right,
which is great. And it definitely moves the ball down the court, down the field, whatever. And obviously, like I said before, her props for the other side of what she does, it doesn't get the same kind of attention. Mm. Breaking new artists, showing stuff to the public that wouldn't otherwise be seen. That's the great stuff. But almost all of that stuff still deals with basically one of two subjects, crime or race, or both.
Yeah.
Right? Who's the audience for that? Is it just that all the kids are stupid and have never heard any of this stuff? Their parents don't talk to them? Their grandparents don't talk to them?
It's one thing that's bothered me at a certain level is that it's kind of like I see those movies, TV shows, and I'm kind of like, that's lived every day.
Why am I here?
I mean, the audience that you're pushing that to has lived that every day. And therefore, are they watching it just to relive their own pain? So is it some sort of like sadomasochistic type of like choice of subject matter?
Or? Well, like our friend Paul, and also your thing that you're doing, mm-hmm, about the thing I did the reading for.
Tulsa thing.
There are pockets of history that like the average even black activist-y type person be, mm-hmm, like, wait, what? Like, mm-hmm, they did what now? Like, yeah, like that. That's the kind of stuff that you want to see. Like Gallipoli is a good example.
Yeah. Right?
You think you know the First World War, mm-hmm, and then you see Gallipoli.
Yeah, I didn't know it was that.
I didn't know it was all about that. Goddamn. Mm-hmm. Right? So if you're bringing me that, I'll show up. But if I'm seeing yet another bio on Martin Luther King, who's it for? Who's the audience? Right?
Especially they never show us anything new.
Right. Like that's my point though. It's like,
well,
it's,
yeah,
I mean, particularly
ground
with that.
Well, yeah,
right.
Well, yeah, because you know, the thing you hear about King a lot is like the womanizing,
right,
stuff like that. Yeah. And there's been a few plays about that and everything, right, like that. But the movie won't touch it because that might be besmirching him in a way that no one wants out there in a movie.
And that's the thing.
That's
and
a
that
problem
comes to back
me
to mainstream Hollywood.
Right.
As much as our liberal friends are our allies in a lot of ways,
mm-hmm,
they also suffer from certain predispositions. What is most likely to get all the way through. A black dude, he says, look, I want to tell this story about these wizards in Louisiana. And I mean, straight up wizards, yo. Mm-hmm. Like, I went down there, I did all the research. They're shooting magic out of their eyes and shit. You know, blah, 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 blah. But it's basically a Doctor Strange type of story.
Right.
The conversation, oh, that was amazing. Did you hear that story? And that person walks out happy. But the conversation backstage is, are we going to let this dude do a Doctor Strange as a black thing and as a dialect? And who's watching this? Who really? Do black people even care about this stuff?
Right.
Well, the one black person who could have answered that question is now no longer in the room. So who are you getting your data from? Right?
From your own, you're pulling out of the air.
Right. So they make it up. They make it based on assumptions. They make it based on TV made by increasingly racist people going backwards. Right? The further back you go, the more racist it becomes. So if all your information is coming from this device,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's going to be a very limited perspective at best. Right? But I now look to our own subculture and our own millionaires and our own billionaires. And I say our, I don't really actually think this way. I talk in these terms because it's easier to talk that way. But you know the story of United Artists, right?
Mm-hmm.
The average person probably just thinks it's one more film company. Right. But it was a bunch of people, one of whom was a complete bastard, D.W. Griffith. Fuck you. But fuck D.W. Griffith. I don't give a fuck about that movie. Fuck him. Fuck him. Fuck him. But you hear what I said?
I'm sorry.
I hope I didn't stutter. But they got sick of the way the old Hollywood system was working them. The lady wasn't getting what she was wanting. The directors weren't getting what they were wanting. They're like, well, you know, between us, we kind of run this town, right? They're not showing up to see Louis B. Mayer show up in these movies, and he's not actually making them, right?
They're showing up to see me. They're showing up to see the little tramp.
So they formed their little thing, right?
Yeah.
And it was a force for decades, even after they were out of the picture.
Mm-hmm.
Are the Oprah, I'm literally sitting on a movie lot right now that's increasingly dominated by Oprah Winfrey's production company, but she's by herself.
Right.
She's a billionaire and she's by herself.
That's a really good point.
Right?
Yeah.
Where's the team up? Mm-hmm. Where's the Avengers of this? Right? I know I'm spending your money. It's not my money, folks, but there's enough of y'all out there. Right.
I mean, look.
You know, Game of Thrones used to be downstairs.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, there's. Well, we can't say we can't say Cosby anymore. But you know,
we can say it.
But there's Michael. But Michael Jordan has money.
They got stacks of money.
I mean, granted, some of these NBA players like LeBron James and Reggie Miller, like those guys are doing stuff,
right.
You know, like,
and then they're hiring their friends, they're putting them to college and they're bringing them back,
like that.
But
I kind of feel like, you know, when we were someone was trying to raise money one time for something, and someone said we should go to see athletes. I was like, you can't go to one athlete because they get so much pull at them,
and their advisors are
telling them no because it's so obvious that they're going to lose money.
You're definitely going to
lose money. But somehow, if you had like. You know, like 10 athletes, like basically
get a room full.
Like if you got the whole like all-star team of the East and say, can you guys put in, you know, $1 million a pop? Right. So that's $12 million to do a movie. And since you guys are getting around, you know, they're getting huge, they get $15, $20 million a year. You guys could afford to put in $1 million, and there's ways to write that off. And
that's your bar bill, you know, in Cabo San Lucas.
Yeah, that's your thing. And I don't know.
Your
I mean, it is.
You know how they play.
It's been a lot.
They play.
Right.
They make it rain, dude. Yeah. They make it rain. Yeah. So watch you make it rain on some brothers trying to make some stuff.
Right.
Some
and sisters trying to make it out. You know, because I think the thing with Oprah and what she's doing is fantastic, but it's like. The one thing I loved about United Artists is that those guys, you know, Chaplin and Pickford and Fairbanks, they all kind of had their own kind of, you know, point of view. So the stuff they did kind of fit.
Like, they fit together.
Yeah, they fit together, and the stuff they put out wasn't all one type of movie.
But they agreed at the beginning it wouldn't all be one type of movie.
And that's what's great. And I think that's the only thing about Oprah's situation. And look, it's her company, her money, so she gets to determine what that is.
I'm not saying Oprah. I'm not blasting Oprah.
I'm not blasting her either. I'm just saying
she's by herself. She's
yeah.
There should be a giant Spike Lee building somewhere, maybe coupled with another director if he doesn't want to go it alone. 40 Acres and a Mule was a solo project.
For a long time.
It went away.
Yeah.
As it was. It looked like it was building out all the merchandising and all that other stuff. But ultimately, all that went just to Spike. It didn't expand out. And the one difference is, frankly, what Oprah is actually doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we watched this building get built.
Yeah.
She's got two productions in in production on the wall up here like any other lot. And granted, it's a micro studio.
There are no other big billboards, but
right.
that billboard.
It's a mini studio, right. but it's a freaking studio, yo, mm-hmm. right? She's not the only one capable of doing this. Right.
I know. And to me, she'd probably feel a lot maybe relieved if someone else joined her, because sure. then it's not all on me.
Well, that was what Tyler was doing at first, but I guess that didn't work. But
well, you know, that's a whole other show too.
Right.
Yeah. Right. I don't know.
What
I
mean, I'm saying is our subculture seems like it's like I'm looking like my hopes, Ava DuVernay on one side, Donald Glover on the other side.
Right. I love
right?
that.
Right. Because yeah. that kid. Again, right. he's young enough, he could be my kid. Yeah. When I found out all the back stuff on Atlanta, I was like, oh, okay, go on. Mm-hmm. And then I watched it because I was like, really? I lived in Atlanta. I need to watch a show about that craziness. People don't even know how crazy Atlanta yeah. is. Anyone who doesn't remember Freaknik does not know how crazy Atlanta can get.
Right.
Okay. But I was like, again, I've already been there. I don't need to see this. And then I watched it and I was like, not only is like everyone's going crazy about all that, mm-hmm. all the blackness and all that. I'm like, this is a very sort of, what's the word? Magical realism.
Yes.
Show.
Yes. Yes.
And no one has mentioned the magical realism.
That's a really good point.
No, but, well, no, but, you know, because this is something that I was talking to my brother about this. It's something I kind of don't like about film criticism or TV criticism, like the critics do. Like the lens that everyone uses now and has been for a while is race or class or gender is the thing that like is always front and center of every piece of fucking criticism. And it doesn't matter if it's a white project, unless it's some big ass fucking mm-hmm. tentpole thing or whatever it is. That's all you can talk about. I remember when I was like reading, I used to get this magazine called Sight and Sound from
I remember that.
So I read that all the time when I was growing up. And it's like those British guys would approach the movie like what you're saying. To find some concept that these guys were exploring and say, this is why they're fucking doing this, and this is what fucking made it an interesting piece to do, and this is why it's cool, and you know, whatever it is. And I think that's what is missing about, you're right, because I've only seen two episodes of Atlanta, but the minute you said that, I was like, oh yeah, it's fucking like, it's like
Milagro Bienfil War.
It's like,
or
what's his name? Like Borgia.
Exactly.
His work. Right. Or it's like, what's his name? Isabel Allende's kind of stuff. And I'm like, okay, shit, this is, but that's not even mentioned in anything I read about
because
it.
Because no one's expecting it to be operating on that level.
You know,
just not even thinking about
it. But the black critics should be saying that. Well, I mean, I would like them to say that. I mean, now that might be, you know, but again, for them, it almost seems like it has to come out of those lens of it's the race thing first, or whatever it is.
This is what I'm getting at,
and it's like I don't like that
because we as people, all of the different subcultural groups, women and fold in women because women have this secondary issues going on at all times. This is what we live in, right? So who's the audience? You're not revealing anything to me. Right?
Right.
As soon as I step out of my house, literally, I don't even have to leave the house. Turn on the TV, I'm living that life automatically. Okay? So I always ask myself, who's the audience? Like, I'm not talking about the craftsmanship. I'm not talking about the quality of the work and any actors, writers. All of that can be gold. Why did we make this? Who is this for?
Right.
And I'm not making movies for a bunch of liberals to come in and pat themselves on the back about, hey, I went to see Selma, y'all.
Mm-hmm.
I'm with that.
Yeah.
I'm woke too.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, right. See, you know, it's funny you bring this up and you talk about the craft or when you talk about Tangerine. I ever like, I want to say like, I can't, maybe turn of the century or maybe a little before that. You know, there's this Dutch filmmaker named Lars von Trier.
Yeah.
And he had this thing where he put together this collective and I think like four filmmakers. And they, it was at Cannes one year. I think it was 97, maybe 93. But they did this thing called Dogma 97, right?
Okay.
And what it was is that they said, we're going to make the movies we make next, we're only going to use like video cameras. We're not going to use movie lights. We're not going to use all this kind of like you know, like the tricks.
So what, like verite? Like almost like
it's almost verite style, but it was narrative stuff.
Okay. Mm.
And there was this one guy, this Dutch guy, he came with this movie called The Celebration. It's about this family that came back to their ancestral estate to celebrate the I think the parents' like 60th wedding anniversary.
Okay.
And then you find out that there's you know there's like four kids or something like that, and there's one kid, it was a twin. Like the middle kid was a twin, and it was a sister, and his sister's dead. She committed suicide.
Okay,
and that's kind of like hanging over
the whole celebration,
okay. You know. And everyone's like, but it's the dad, blah 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 blah. And then it unravels that you find out the dad used to rape the sister, and the twins used to get raped by the dad.
Oh
like
God.
That's what comes out in this thing.
Okay,
but it's shot with no lights and just like with a high video camera. But it's so fucking captivating.
You have to watch.
You're just like, oh shit! But just from the beginning of it, it's like, and he was like, yeah, we don't use dollies. If we had to move the camera like that, and we put it on like a broomstick and moved it like that, and I was like. It wasn't smooth at all, it was jerky as shit.
It was a back to basics kind of like
total back to basics. Like you know what we right. But it was like but so I'm watching it, but it's like the performances are so and the sense that there's a mystery going on with the family is really apparent. So you're kind of like right. watching who knows who cares who doesn't care who's
sort of like The Invitation.
Only
with stone knives and bare skin.
Yes. And it was so fascinating, and I was kind of like. But that's a story that I hadn't seen it told that way before.
Yeah.
But there are stories about incest and stuff like that and child abuse and rape, but it was so fascinating.
Well, like your work, some of the stuff you talked to us about, I'm not going to blow up any of these scripts because they're not out or whatever, but you can evolve. Like to speak about the 20th century Western world, certainly, is to talk about gender issues, is to talk about race right. issues, is to talk about all kinds of ethnic diversity, all of that stuff, because it's all part of the soup.
Right.
You don't have to make a movie about it, because if you're telling the truth, it's in it.
Right.
I think about Sophie's Choice, where everybody's white, and they're not even really talking about what the larger thing is. We're just talking about this one little lady's issues and why she can't get along with her man, who's actually kind of crazy, and all of a sudden you're caught up in these characters. And then it's quote unquote about something.
Right.
Right. But that isn't a sneak up on you. The whole movie was always about all of the different things at once. That's good movie making.
Yeah.
Like, so I'm less concerned with, I just want us dreaming bigger than this.
Yeah. I think that's a really good
conversation being had, and it's a little bit depressing. That, like, again, we talked more specifically in some ways off the mic. But a lot of the things that are being trumpeted right now as being like groundbreaking or this is so controversial or whatever, I'm like, man, I saw this stuff in 84 or, you know, I saw it on reruns in 84 and it was really made in the 60s. Like, really? We're still having not a version of the conversation, not here's where the conversation is now, exactly the same conversation.
Yeah.
Like, are we not thinking about anything but this? Because, man, those movies aren't being made for me. I want to see us with some lightsabers and, you know, shoving the devil back down into a sewer pipe and, you know, inventing machinery that's never been invented before.
Yeah, that was the thing that, I mean, you know, I'm not sure if you saw The Last Jedi or not, you know.
I have seen The Last
Jedi. But the thing about it that a lot of people were championing is that it's like, you know, the two characters driving the story, really driving the story. I mean, the plot of it is an Asian woman and a black guy.
Right. Yes.
You know, and I thought that was really cool. But
They get high marks for diversity.
They get very high marks. But the thing is that that's not even discussed in that movie,
right.
That it's an Asian person or a black person.
Well, they don't have those ethnicities. That's just a human that looks different.
Yeah, you know.
Right.
And I kind of was like, that was cool. And I kind of feel like you're right. You need to dream bigger because it feels to me like I understand there is these issues that are in our community that won't go away, like police brutality won't go away and the gang shooting won't go away, everything like that. But because it won't go away, I don't need that to that can be part of the entertainment, but it doesn't have to be the entertainment.
I'm not giving you $14 to beat me up the way life beats me up. I'm not paying you to be pressed in that way.
You know, it's like that. I mean, like that's not enough for me. you know.
That's not why I read books. I have life. I have life. I can step out of my front door. You know the most boring movies and stuff like that? The ones that are about show business. To me. Now, a lot of audience people love that stuff because it's a black box to them. Right. But like, unless it's a story about a crime that takes place in the show business world, that I'll watch because that's like anything.
Get shorties.
Right. Something like that. But if it's literally about, I'm trying to get my movie made and it's how hard it was and I had to do it. I don't care, dude. I don't care how that guy made his car. I don't care about that either. Does it drive? Cool. Right? Like that. I always wonder who the audience is. Like, who was this made for? It was made for you guys because you think this is cool. You and your five friends with $10 million between you. You thought this was cool. It's not cool, man. Stop making this movie. Right? And the same way, it's not that I don't want those movies to be made because there's always a new generation. And maybe they didn't get this story. I find a lot of holes in conversation. I'll say something and people be like, wait, what? You know, and I'm like, oh my God, really? What school did you go to? And I mean high school. What high school did you go to? Right? But that's a relatively limited audience of people who are ignorant of a given feature, right? I'm watching white people, Japanese people, Korean people dreaming all kinds of crazy crap. Right. Like, they don't feel a limitation. They don't feel restricted to talk only about this one thing. I'm seeing Christian people making things that are not Christian related. They're just making the thing, you know?
Yeah.
Assuming that their Christianity may, I guess, come through, but it isn't about that.
Right.
You know, I'm so tired of this.
It's not about God.
Let me put it like this. And I bring this up all the time, not just because you happen to be gay, is gay people are going to be in my stuff. Because gay people are in my life. I don't have to make a big joke. Hey, here's the gay person. Right. Let's make an entrance. Mm-hmm. You know, like that.
And hey,
I'm just gay friend. You know, like that, right? I don't need movies like that. And I don't need movies where the black people are just there for that. I don't need movies where the Asian people are just there for that. If you're going to do it for that reason, don't do it. Don't do me that favor. I don't want to see it.
Right.
Okay? I'd rather be absent than that. That's me.
Right. Okay? No, that makes perfect sense.
But also in the audience, there's this weird squatting up that we were sort of alluding to, too. Like, what if I made a movie? What if I decided to make a movie set in Amish country in 1823? There's no black people in that.
Right.
Why'd you make that movie, Jeff? Why'd you get all that money to make that movie? You could have made this movie about Crooklyn. Like, Crooklyn. Why'd you make another Crooklyn? Like, who are you? You know, like, who's that person in the back yelling?
I wanted to tell this story. Yeah. I wanted to tell this story.
This story spoke to me. Well, what's wrong with you that spoke to you, but this other thing? And whoa.
Right.
There's a whole big world out there. You can make that movie. Go make it. I'll show up. I'm happy to come to your movie about that. Right? Well, Paul, when he wanted to make Black 22s, was very upset. What do I do, man? What do I do? I'm a white guy trying to tell this black people's story. And I'm like, are they Americans? Yep. Did any black people in the last, 1923 or something? I'm like, plenty of black filmmakers had access to this history book that you stumbled on. Any of them make that show? Screw them. If they had a problem, refer them to me. Right?
Refer them to me.
Because it's just laying there, right? Why shouldn't you pick it up? As long as you're telling it authentically.
I mean, look. From what he's told me about that, that's one of those things that you just kind of kick yourself about. You're like, fuck, why didn't I look at
it? Why didn't I already know that?
I agree. Exactly. I didn't know it either.
If you have that reaction to a
didn't
story.
Didn't know it at all.
That's a good story to tell.
That's a great story. And, and to me, it shouldn't matter who's telling it. Because it's being told, like you said, if you tell it authentically, it
doesn't matter.
And it's not like Paul.
He had the passion. That's what was important.
He had the passion.
That's what was important.
He knew that if I do this, I have people who I can go to who will be honest with me about, am I doing this right?
Right.
And the thing is, that's what you do with like
any subject that you don't know.
Not even that. It's like. I do that with anything I write. Can you read this and tell me if it feels
real?
Where'd
I go wrong?
You know, if you just happen to have a part that's with someone black, then I can speak to that slightly more. Like I was reading a friend of my script last night and talking to her about it, and there's a black couple, and they had there was this line of dialogue that they had in the piece, and I said I don't like this line of dialogue, not because it's not real. But these people have been married for probably 15, 20 years because they have teenagers.
Right.
That's the conversation that they would have had when they were dating.
20s, right.
You know, so you can't have
this
here.
They know each other? Yeah, exactly.
I mean, unless you're using it as a joke, you know, because right. you know, it's like a little in joke that they have.
Like they talk to each other, like this.
Yeah, okay. But it wasn't supposed to be that. And I was like, so you got to kind of just look at it that way, yeah. you know. She's like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense, you know. And I feel like that's where, you know, that to me is why you can write anything, because you're gonna go and get someone's opinion who's an authority.
That's
on
right.
It.
Yeah. That's right. You
know? All I know is when I started writing, there weren't a lot of black guys writing fantasy. There were not.
There's still not.
There's mm-hmm. zero at the time. I think there were basically zero in Hollywood doing it. Mm. And you're right, across the board, fantasy sci-fi was not an area people were genuinely shocked mm-hmm. to see me. You know, and it
because you don't have the most, you know, Jerome Thompson name or some shit, do you?
No, they were actually even more so. Right?
You sound like you're British.
And yeah. all of my scripts were multi-ethnic, so there right. was no way you could peg. Right, they often had black leads, but they were still whatever, right? And I'm like, all right, so now I'm almost 20 years into the screenwriting thing, and Ava and the Hughes brothers with Book of Eli.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing they did, the From Hell.
From Hell, okay. Oh, right. And?
We got to think about it.
And? Huh. Right? That's a shame. Oh, what's his name? Charles Murray on the movie, the TV show about the guy reliving the same. It was Groundhog Day for a cop.
Oh yeah.
It was excellent.
Yeah.
Didn't last. People didn't want to go for it, but I love that. At any rate, that's what four in 20 years, and how many shows about the struggle? Mm-hmm, how many mm-hmm. shows about, you know?
What's going on in the hood? Like, the
I'm trying to get out shot, of this gang, you know, life that I'm trapped in. And
the girl who's the kid who's fucking and won't the family. It's
oh my
just
god!
Like,
you know, if I see one more of those things, like I'm burning all this shit down.
The illegitimate kid. It's just like, oh god! Do I need to see this anymore? Because it's like, I don't know. I mean, I've had a lot of
was
people.
Was that Inhumans or which one was it?
No, it was a while back.
Yeah.
I'll come up with it.
Daybreak. Yeah.
With Taye Diggs. Yeah, that was a great show.
That was a great show. Got one season.
Yeah. Really cool. Really, really cool.
But who's dreaming that way?
I mean, it's like I got through like a lot of like pushback on writing shows like that.
Yeah.
And I just was like, I can't understand it. I never understood why. I mean, I did. I mean, the second or third time I got it, but I just was like, why?
Because the
why
the,
is it that? Because
there's
like
no pipeline for it. There's no established
but
pipeline.
The crazy thing is, when I grew up, the big movies were like Star Wars and Blade Runner.
Yeah, we went to see all that mess.
Look, are we not seeing it? But then I realized. I've met people who were black who have not seen Star Wars, who have not seen Blade Runner, who have not seen Indiana Jones. Like, I mean, like, you know, not in the film industry, but some people film industry too. But it just kind of struck me as I was kind of like
too fanciful for them.
You know what? They tell me like as they got older.
That's white people's magic.
But that told me immediately. That my childhood is so different than yours.
But wait, they all showed up for The Matrix, man. They all showed up for The Matrix.
They did at that point.
All black folks showed up for The
Matrix. But does black people win The Matrix?
Yes, but who made it?
I know.
Two transgender siblings.
Yeah.
Okay. There should be an army of people making all kinds of stuff. That's all I'm
getting. I know. There needs to be.
I don't want people limiting themselves to... Yes, your life experience, certainly, if you got to tell that story, by all means. But do what Ava did. She told that life experience, a lot of that, and then the next jump was into outer space, literally.
That's a big jump.
Okay. But not really.
No, I mean...
It seems big because right. it's unusual, but it shouldn't be unusual.
I was talking about budget.
Oh,
but yes,
yeah,
right.
Definitely yeah, that. Well, but from her point of view, I guarantee it's not unusual.
No,
because we all write many different
right.
things.
She, right. I'm sure she's just like, no, sorry, Black Panther. I'll be over here with the Wrangling Todd. Thank you very much. Right? And nothing against Black Panther. It's just like, this is what I'm ready for.
Well, you know what? It's probably, I think, you know, interesting, and I know you got it wrong, but... I bet you that she probably thought about Black Panther, and then the Wrinkle in Time thing came up,
and she's like, "That's
oh,
for me.
That's time to. Yeah. I'm not gonna do this."
Because also what you're saying about director POV, more freedom to exercise a vision. I've got a right. vision I can apply to that. I just went like I remember, and I'll stop because mm-hmm. I know we're about to wrap up. But I got pulled into this stuff because of comics and TV, sci-fi shows, action shows, all that stuff when everybody was basically white. And we mentioned Bill Cosby in that sort of off to the left kind of way now because of all the horrible stuff. But I Spy was one of the things that I was like, wait, what?
This is shit.
That was all Robert Culp saying, insisting on Bill Cosby being the other guy. Right. That wasn't really all about Bill. It was much more about the white dude going, wait, what? Come on now. It's the 60s. Let's do it. Right? But from the little boy outside, I didn't turn into a fan. I turned into a writer because of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to have that stuff. And, like, you can't always rely on – like, I see so much protesting about why didn't Paramount do X with this movie. Why? And I do it, too. I'm not saying I'm immune. Why didn't this – why didn't they do this with it? Why did they cast this person? Why did they cast that person? Why, how come that person directed all that stuff? But they don't support the little – like, what was it? Advantageous is the one I keep talking about all the time. Same time Ex Machina comes out, another sci-fi movie comes out with all Asian, or mostly Asian cast, actually about something. I think, frankly, a better movie, more cutting edge. The science fiction in Ex Machina was like from 1974, from a person who reads science fiction all the time. It might have been new to all you people, but that was like, I wasn't even born when some of this stuff was being talked about. And then here comes Advantageous, which is actually about something. It's about real sci-fi, hard sci-fi, not self-financed, but like independently financed.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the big uproar? Where's, like, once again, like I always say about black people, if all the Asian Americans, or even a big segment of them, had shown up to see that movie, that movie would have blown the hell up, but it didn't. Everybody much preferred to yell at Paramount.
Right.
And I'm like, well, then suffer. You know, at some point you have to start going, what am I doing?
Right. Yeah.
Especially when the tools are so easy to get. I taught myself how to animate in 2 years, like where I can put it up next to an old Hanna-Barbera cartoon and go, close, you know.
Yeah.
That's just some dude who was like, you know what? Let's try this out. I'm not even smart, you know, right? Like, and the tools are just there. So where's all these dreamers? They dreaming the same dream, really?
I don't think they are.
That's what's up. Well, on that note, thank y'all. Good episode. That was fun. Y'all was just going in on some shit. So check it out. This is going to be dropping 2018 for the first weekend.
What?
2018.
Yeah.
Anything y'all planning to do big time 2018?
I'm dropping a bunch of comics.
Yeah, yeah.
My own comics. The Winter Man comics started this year with my own thing that I'm drawing and writing because I wanted to get the waters wet. But I'm going to make an announcement right before the end of the year of the new artists that are going to be doing these three new books. The way it's going to drop is going to be very interesting. So hopefully the audience will be more involved.
Yeah.
No superheroes, no long-term, like, you don't have to know anything. Mm-hmm. Just come in and pick this up. Sci-fi and fantasy, action, 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 because that's my thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's new characters, great stuff, all digital. Winter Man Comics. Obviously, Black Panther's coming out next year.
Yes.
And a secret thing that my partner and my little company, Genre 19, and I are putting together right now that I will promise to break on this show.
Okay, cool.
If it lands.
All right.
It's a big deal. We already put a bunch of oomph into it. We didn't miss the trying to sell stuff at the end of the year deadline. They got a lot of money left over. Let's get them.
Exactly. You know?
So probably in February, we're going to start trying to hit Netflix and Hulu and all those guys with this project.
Yeah.
If it happens, it's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
And we will break it on your show.
That's what's up.
Cool.
Love it. Where you at, Chris? What's going on? Where you at? Where you at, Jeff?
JeffreyThorne.com, spelled first name, spelled the British way.
With a G.
Last name, spelled the British way. Thank you, my parents. And on Twitter, at Game of Thorns, if you can handle it.
If you can.
It's a bumpy ride.
Where you at, Chris? I'm at Unauthorized CBD on Twitter and Instagram at DerekBrothers.com. And...
you're not using Shadowboxer?
No, we are.
Okay.
Shadowboxercinema.net, but DerekBrothers.com will take you to Shadowboxer.
How you doing with the shirt? You sold me?
I've sold a couple.
Okay, good.
Yeah, there's more. I need to do some marketing on it.
I did not know about this.
Oh, I'm selling these shirts that have like these seven black female directors, just, you know, their names. It's called the Queens of Cinema shirt.
Look at you.
So I'm putting that out
get
there.
One of those.
Yeah, we got to be blasting those.
Yeah.
I haven't even seen a picture. Have you seen a picture?
You know what? I'm going to do that. I'm going to do that this weekend, and I'll put it up on all the things, on Twitter and everything like that.
Yeah.
So that, close on this.
That's my phone right there.
It's.
Or is it your phone? Or is it outside?
Oh, it's my phone.
this is not me this time.
Yeah, that's the
this
meter.
This is alone.
What do I have? The movie. Hopefully the movie. Yeah. Hopefully we'll know, like, in...
Yes.
Sweet.
In the next month or two about the movie.
We'll be shooting next year.
Yes, awesome. That's, which would be super cool. Because I got with Peter about it too. So there's a lot of options with that that are cool. I hope that comic thing will sell. And I know I just got to get the issues like ready so
the
men are, can go and sell them. And then, you know, those pitches. Hopefully those
lots
work.
Of
so
pitching.
Lots of pitching. Yeah.
That's what's up.
Sci-fi shows.
Well, I got one good thing. I don't want to jinx it. I'll tell y'all off. I don't want to jinx it. So I'm your boy, Hilliard Guest. You guys can find me on Twitter at Hilliard Guest. Follow the show, Screenwriters RR on Twitter. Any questions, screenwritersrentroom@gmail.com. Please go on iTunes, give us a 5-star review. We need that for The Matrix. Follow us on Facebook. Follow us on, I already said Twitter. Fuck that shit.
Jesus Christ.
I do not have a potty mouth. I know what you're talking about.
It's just when we get together.
So just want to wish everybody a happy new year, because this will be out at that time. Hope you guys have some great goals. You know, hope your dreams come true. Hope it'll be a better 2018, because 2017 was kind of, I'm going to say it, it was fucked up.
Oh, man.
It was a hard one.
Well, King Cheeto, you know, right. he's just, his shadow looms over.
Exactly. So everybody join me. Y'all know how we do it on The Rant Room. On the show, we keep it real. We keep it opinionated. We keep it what, everybody?
Wakanda!
Peace, y'all.
I'ma say what I feel, and I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to The Rant Room.
Well, you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminishing, the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed. In the rent room, we let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes, that's Mr. Bolakaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the crap of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want.
Welcome to the Rant Room.